This week on RSPB Update, Once Upon a Time continues with the next chapter, Flashback. We visit Ava, Ozan, and some Drazus on our way to a Leeds Q&A. Mods Warden and Liam take stock of where we're at and where we're going in April. Then we answer your questions. This is RSPB Update, episode 824, recorded Thursday, April 8th, 2021. Pet peeves. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update. Tannis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And also joining us this week is Questcaping. As you guys know, it is Quest Week, Mini Quest Week. Welcome back.
Hello, hello.
We're a continuation of the 20-year anniversary quest of a piece called Flashback of Once Upon a Time. We'll get to that in just a moment. Welcome back to all of our listeners, of course. And, you know, this week, I said, it feels a bit different because second week back of updates since things have started to return to normal. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see that retrospective post that's on the way. That was detailed in the live stream. We've, of course, got details on that, details on the quest. We're also, of course, with this, going to look at Ninja Strike 21, talking about pets and logs, and just as we have been doing, keeping everybody up to date on the login, lockout, account returning phase. And then a couple of questions to round this one all off. But if you're joining us for the first time, check us out in our friends chat, Bits Bytes. You can also find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And hey, if you want to guest on the podcast, you want to write articles for us, we also have a help wanted form that you can find at update.rsbnb.com/help. But let's dive into this quest, because this is the continuation of the anniversary quest, the following on from the first part. This one is called Foreshadowing. I have a feeling about this quest. Am I right in saying that this one didn't feel as impactful as part
really?
One?
I feel this one. I feel I like this one more, actually.
Okay.
I feel it felt more involved due to the differences in how it worked this time around.
All right. Fair enough. And this is, of course, continuing on and talking about the story associated with the new NPC that we met, Closure, that was brought in with the first quest. And this is, you know, we have been said in the past that there wouldn't be any time travel in quests. And, you know, they said, hey, this time you're going back and you're going to be looking at events of Merlin's crystal, diamond in the rough, and animal magnetism. And, you know, they did it actually in a really interesting way that didn't involve time travel, which, of course, we have to commend themselves for. But
it's not time travel, just memories.
Yeah, it's just memories. It's just memories that you can rewind and play back. And what's happened?
Get away with it.
What's happened with this is you return to Death's office and then go through the side door and talk to Closure. And then inside there, you will say that, well, you know, after our first episode in Foreshadowing, talking about Relomia, she has continued to cause problems inside Gielinar in terms of messing about with people's histories to the point where there's these books that they can find of a person's history, and the book can be edited. And with that, it can, in effect, change the events of a past encounter in-game. And this is, of course, where dealing with Merlin, Ozan, and Ava all come in. And these are all quests that we have interacted with in the past as World Guardian. And your job in this quest is to set history right by going back to key moments in these quests and fixing the memories with this. You have any comments at this point before we start diving in about how this actually works on this?
Well, there wasn't as much of Relomia in this one, I felt. She just appeared right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Was a little was a little cheeky about what she'd done. Oh, ho, 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 ho. And then vanished. Yep. So.
And we're left to clean up the mess, of course.
Yeah. So, as far as contributing towards an overarching storyline with her and these quests as they're ongoing, there wasn't really much there.
Right. And that's a theory we had coming out of the first one, is that this entire year-long mini-quest was going to be some kind of build-up for the character Verlomia, as her mentor Sliske is now gone, and she's trying to get back at us for this. And, you know, that could still be the thing, and we were hoping, or thinking rather, that there could be some character development following from that, but I don't think she got much character development in this quest.
Yeah, pretty much. But on another note, related to that, we are here in this post as an AdraQuest world, where in fact we have been seeing some signs of something rather Sliske related going on within us, and I was wondering whether that would even be picked up with the Verlomia stuff, about how that is very much taking the angle of he's gone, here's how we deal with it. And yet, a couple weeks later, we get as an AdraQuest, and he's very much not gone, he's... Well, he's whatever is happening there. So, yeah, it's interesting to
maybe
see those
Verlomia's
two things.
Verlomia's trying to get into the World Guardian's head because she knows that Sliske would have had the capability to do some kind of transference on that.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Verlomia is actually, to some extent, aware, I might think. There is that bit at the end of Sliske's endgame where you are breaking the news to Verlomia, and then you black out for a convenient second, and afterwards Verlomia is rather happy. So there's the matter of reconciling that with what she's doing here, and I think you might have just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, it's weird. I never used to feel that I was competent enough in the RuneScape lore to make these kind of theories, but I've made a couple of theories that seem to gain some widespread traction in Clan Quest, at least, you know, starting with As and Adras and some of the Sliske things and the Shadow Anima before that, that are kind of pointing in that direction. So we'll just have to wait and see. Tanis, what did you think?
I think from what you guys have said, sounds like it's a perfectly good continuation of questline. Fortunately, I have been a little busy.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, can't catch fish, Shane, if you're pulling in the water.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that after.
Oh boy.
I know one of our listeners is keenly asking about that this week, so you're gonna have to maybe break some secrets on that. But it's a bit of a teaser for later. But following from this, after your visit to the Blue Moon Inn, you're told that you need to instead head to the Jolly Boar Inn, which, of course, is the one near the entrance to the Infernal Source, and find Verlomia there. And you, in the end, get this stack of books that she has messed with. And this is, you know, for all intents and purposes, where the mini quest begins. And, you know, this is the fun discussion that we had at the end of the last one, is that are these mini quests, are these actually quests, and pairing them all together in terms of how they stack one next to the other, they could very well be called quests, but I think it was said in the live stream a few weeks back that they weren't going to actually call them quests because they didn't want to be stacking up this many quest points and quest rewards for the quest point shop rewards that give those clue casket items.
Yeah, that's attached to sort of baggage quests these days.
Yeah. And you know, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. On one note, though, they have actually been added to their own quest series in the quest logging game.
Oh, so okay. I didn't see that.
So they're listed under Once Upon a Time now.
Okay, that's good. That adds a good amount of presence for them, then.
Yeah, a nice way to group them all together and make them flow together for someone coming in later.
Good. Good. So following from this, you head back to Closure in Death's office, or rather the door in Death's office. And from this, you determine where you're going to go and who you're going to repair first. I repaired the Ava memory first. Who did you repair first?
I also went with Ava.
Okay. Interesting. I just chose that one because out of everything that we have seen, I thought that, you know, this one's probably going to be the least consequential.
Yeah, I was thinking that because, well, I don't know, the Merlin quests, the
those
Camelot
seem...
quests are strange and almost extraneous in terms of lore these days.
But anyways, you wind up in a fragment of a memory from the animal magnetism quest. That quest was so long ago, and you need to set a few things right inside of Draenor Manor. You need to first, of course, change something within your character in terms of what your character does. You also need to modify the lever in the room, and then following from that, you need to change the clock into another wardrobe. And I wonder if this is the same for everybody. When the cutscene first played of what was wrong in the quest, an undead cow appeared. Is that what appeared for you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And we get the return of one of my favorite RuneScape characters, Cow1337. Do you remember Gnomecopters?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That was one of my favorite things as a kid playing RuneScape. Go jet around all these members' areas and see the player spoofs running about. And Cow1337 had a long and beautiful tradition of player spoofs.
Okay, that's fun. I didn't know where that came from, but that's very good. Of course, it's an undead chicken that you're after with this one.
Yes. So it does, on one hand, if you want to get it right, it kind of helps to have the background knowledge of the quests, but also there's so few options that just trying things and getting it right will work in the end. I didn't even notice it was the wrong lever at first.
Yeah, same.
Mm-hmm. He remembers what furniture she has in her room, eh?
Yeah, and I think it was also because we weren't there. We were there around Halloween as well, and I probably saw that and I thought, oh, that clock doesn't look like that's exactly right. So
yeah.
And this is the depth of interaction that we have in each of the memories. And I wasn't sure going through this if there was anything I was supposed to pull out of this, aside from just the fact that, hey, you're setting these right.
I don't know. What do you really mean by that?
Well, I was just wondering, is there maybe some sort of insight we're supposed to take into Relomia from this, or am I just kind of reliving this moment?
She writes bad fan fiction.
Okay,
that's
fair
the
enough.
Insight.
Yeah, I mean, your skin is blue.
Yep. Those interesting hair highlights.
You know, I don't think I actually ever looked like this, your character says.
That's quite a way to handle the fact that everyone's so remarkably different in game.
Yeah. Oh my god, it just completely changed differently. So.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed the silly little things you get when there's something still wrong. Were you getting those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just, I think the funniest one that I had happen with that was on the Merlin's crystal part, but we'll get to that so funny with that.
I will add one thing about how I played the quest. I was playing it on mobile, and there are a couple of different options in this particular part with Ava where you can do something wrong and end up being squashed by a big rock.
Oh,
and
that didn't happen on my end, but all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made the effort to go through all of it just because I like seeing all the different bits of dialogue. But the problem with doing so on mobile was that every time the big rock came down, my mobile app froze.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
Baby steps.
Yeah, I am playing on the iPhone beta, so that's quite possibly something to do with it. But I imagine they also quite possibly ported that in from somewhere they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And get some weird interactions in the process.
All right. Let's move on. Who'd you go to next?
I personally went to Merlin next.
Okay, I went to Ozan next, and we're going to do Ozan first because that's that's who's up next in the B roll. But let's talk about Ozan, and perhaps I should have went with Merlin first as well, just because of how those quests were so far out. But I thought that that one might have the biggest impact. So I saved that one for last. But nonetheless, Ozan, you wind up on top of Alcarid Bank from that quest. And, you know, I got this one straight off the bat right away. I remember the fact that, you know, you were supposed to jump first. You had to change the bail or change the little thing down below to be a cart with a hay bale in it. Your options down there to have an empty cart, a rock, or the cart with the hay bale in it. And of course, the hay bale one is the one that you want. Ozan says that he didn't want to jump first, so you jump first, and then Ozan follows you down. And I think this is as close as we came in RuneScape ever to rooftop agility.
Yes. I would love if they managed to convert the Alcarid, the quest infrastructure, into an actual agility course.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoy the rooftop agility courses in Old School.
Yeah, I was going to say Old School has that.
Mm-hmm. What a way to bring life to the entire structure of a place.
Yeah. Now, did you on this one, what happened if you say, what should Ozan do, cry because it's high up here? Did you select that or did you just go along?
I think that was selected by default for me. That was what happened on the very first playthrough.
No, he wound up being dead on the first playthrough for me.
Oh.
He got shot by someone with an arrow.
Oh, yes. So on mine, he did in fact cry because it was high up here. And, well, Goblin Archer comes along out of nowhere and shoots him.
Oh, okay. That might have been what happened then. I might have missed the crying animation. But
yeah, there's some fun stuff on here. For one thing, I like the ability to teleport up and down, having a multi-story experience.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they had that in the actual quest, did they?
No, they did not. Because what was actually happening in this part, I think, was he shoots an arrow and you grapple across it to the palace.
Yes.
Instead of jumping out here.
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember that part now.
Yeah. In that sense, this was actually an extraneous bit they added to the quest for the sake of flashing back in this memory here. So not quite verbatim, but yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's just this could be an interesting way of expanding on quests of the past, if this sort of thing was going to happen. I don't know. Yeah. Do we know how many parts of this mini quest there's going to be for throughout this entire year? No.
Yeah, it's just as many as they create.
Okay. Mm. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I think different J-Mods are having a go at it, actually. The very first one to kick things off was Mod Rowley, whereas this one has been Mod Shrew. And honestly, I didn't really notice much of a difference in terms of writing and stuff. They flowed really well together.
Yeah, and I think that is because there's a central narrative design now behind the characters associated with these, which is something, you know, we probably wouldn't have had a number of years ago when these quests came out.
Here we are with the Mod Warden approach and the greater consistency involved.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's also just been a greater push within the dev team to bring all the lore threads together and, in effect, kind of make sure a consistent story is being told when it comes to whatever that story might be at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. So. Pulling all the threads together.
Yeah, let's move on to Merlin now. Then, of course, with this one, you know, you wind up back in Camelot Castle. And, you know, as you mentioned, this whole arc of Merlin and Camelot quest, they really are something that I think Jagex have wanted to remove from the game, but they haven't had a good replacement for them, so to speak.
Here's an excuse. Relomia rewrote it all.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still on the fence about removing content like that, but that's a topic for another day. So you wind up in the room or in one of the tower columns, I guess you could say. I don't know what those
something
would be called. You have a.
I used to know my castle lingo.
Yeah, you have choices of what your character has to do in terms of ways to free the castle up. There's also a shield on the wall that can be changed, and you can change who is in the crystal. And one of the options that I just could not.
We had one of our clan founders canonized here, didn't we?
We did. Who?
Oh, so if you examine him, because you know how it starts off with Nilrem instead of Merlin,
yes.
Right? It's the backwards name. If you examine him, it's something like a wizard trapped in a crystal, except it's backwards. And you know which of our clan founders is a backwards wizard, right?
Yeah. Oh, that would have been... if it would have just been wizard and they would have reversed it like that.
It's in his examine text, it's there.
Oh. Oh, I missed that. I can't believe I missed that.
I've got a screenshot.
Oh,
I can show you.
Oh, yeah. Please do that.
Hey.
But one of the other options you can do is you can bring out a cannon to... I just could not... I could not stop myself from doing that. So the first change I did was I changed the way of opening the crystal up to a cannon.
Beautiful. Yeah. I think that's almost a bit of a meta joke, isn't it? Because you get the J-mods who'd rather this not be canon, hey?
Yeah. Nothing's too tough
for a cannon.
Having
destroyed my cannon.
Oh, my God. Oh, post that screenshot. Or is it posted somewhere? But, of course, what you have to do, and I should have examined it. I see it. I saw the reverse spelling for crystal, but I just did not. But you, of course, have to set the crystal to be Merlin. You have to change the shield on the wall. And, oh, crap. What was the correct way to free the guy from the...
So it had to be a wall shield instead of the Merlin sucks shield,
right.
Which was quite something. And what was the correct way to free him? I don't remember.
Well,
Excalibur, that's it.
Right, the Excalibur. The other option was your fist. I didn't do the fist. But, okay. Did you also see that the wise old man can be in there?
Yes.
I did that one, and he's like, what? What's going on? I'm going home. And he just teleports away.
Merlin, who knows?
Oh, that was amusing, but nonetheless. Was there anything that we learned from this phase of this? I don't think so.
Not really, just fun.
All right. And then after that, that's all three complete. Then you just return to closure, and that is mini quest complete. With this, you get closure's ghost book as a cosmetic override and a medium XP lamp.
Yeah, nice little override there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I see that now. I see your picture. A powerful Drazu.
Yep.
How does that make you feel, Tanis?
Not good. I was trying to work it backwards in my mind. I'm like, what? That? Oh no!
Did you show this to Draz yet?
I haven't yet. I must.
Right. I'm going to send it to him. See what he says. But absolutely amusing. God, I wish I would have picked that up on the first run. But nonetheless, that's part two. I guess this is just kind of detailing what Relomia can do. If I'm going to try and take a little bit more out of it than just being a fun way to look back at these three quests. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, well, I enjoyed it for what it was and awaiting whatever they have next. Because, yeah, we've had the free to play quest in the first one. Here we've got some rather low tier members quests. And I wonder what things will be like at the point where we start getting Sliske involved, because that's the part where Relomia's character might start opening up, eh?
Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, that's what we think is going to happen. It doesn't mean that it's going to go that way. But I think all the stars are logically pointing in that direction.
Yeah. the more quest involvement, the more Rolomir is actually directly relevant to these rather than just playing around with things that have nothing to do with her.
Yeah. All right. Let us move on to the Ninja Strike then from this week, because that was also here. Ninja Strike 21, Pets and Logs. Starting off, the XX Parrot has been converted from an object pet to a follower pet in the customization interface. Sneaker Peeper has been converted from an object to a follower pet in the customization interface. Dungeoneering tokens have been refunded for any additional Sneaker Peepers you might have had. And the green, blue, red, and black baby dragons have been converted from object pets to follower pets, and their corresponding eggs will now only drop if a respective pet is yet to be unlocked or is still required for the collection log.
Mm. These changes are always controversial with a certain subset.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Yeah, because every time it happens, there's always someone who goes, oh no, I collected 59 of such and such pet and they were wandering in all around my menagerie for years up until this point. And now they're all gone.
I saw the screenshot of the person with all the god owls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on another note, the ones that could grow, they can no longer grow. I actually had a bit of a gathering with a friend who'd been raising his Zamorak hawk. And we gathered together to watch it grow from the middle stage to the final stage. And that was quite something to have it almost like a real pet in normal existence. Yeah. So now it's – people are saying they feel less real because it's less bring out the pet and more push the pet button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tanis, have you heard any – complaints either way on this?
I haven't. I mean, I guess I could kind of see that both ways. But I like the convenience, and I think it's probably the better end of the trade-off deal in that regard. But so, I know what you're saying, Questscaping, because I want to say I raised at least 3 or 4 penguins because I went through a penguin phase of my menagerie, you know. and of course, then you had to have your bulldogs and your cats,
the old pet shop pets.
Uh huh. Yeah, I've had them all and raised them all.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. I wish there was a middle road here because I do see the convenience, and definitely from a technical standpoint, it's better to consolidate them rather than having a dozen different systems. But all the same, it'll be nice to keep these real feelings going in some way that works better because the legendary pets can grow, for instance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the tech is there.
Yeah. Just wish it would be... Well, it's a bit too late now for everyone's gardens full of dragons, eh?
Yeah, and you know, people have been wanting something to be done with the menagerie, I think. Because you remember one of the Rune Labs ideas that came out really high on the polling was the pet park.
Yes.
And, you know, they said, we don't exactly know what we want to do with this, but we get that you guys have something with your pets. And it feels like that this Ninja Strike did this, and well, this is I think the cleanliest option clutter wise it takes that little bit away from it if you want to, you know, just grow another one.
The clutter is a very human thing, isn't it?
So,
but at the same time, I mean, I don't think this really scratched the itch for what people kind of wanted pet wise.
No.
I mean, I think they were okay with a pet park because a menagerie would be part of a construction rework, and well, a lot of people have just given up hope.
Yeah.
So the pet park was like this, you know, above, you know, on the surface thing that was going to happen. And then do you remember there was something to do with being able to display your boss pets with War's Retreat,
That was never iterated on. And as I understand it, it's still an option going forward. It's just a question of, you know, resources and time.
Right. So, I mean, there's definitely a want for something, you know, something more, I think. And there appears to be like an acknowledgement, you know, on Jagex's side too. And maybe they needed to clean it up before they could maybe make the next step. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, I think, like you said, the answer is in the form of the legendary pet that can grow. Same thing also happens as, you know, you get more rune score with the rune score pet. That changes appearance. So from that, we can infer that the hooks in the game are there so that pet growth can be tied to pretty much anything that they want, whether that be time, whether that be quest points or GP or a level. It can be tied to that.
They can be dynamic, yes. Yeah. I think the issue of having multiple of them is kind of a harder one because
people want to just go through that experience again, right?
Yeah, because now it's one unlock and done, and I don't think there's any case where there's a workaround for that.
Yeah, I mean, I still have, you know, 50 of each colored egg in my inventory or in my bank. What am I going to do with those at some point, right? I mean, I'm going to hold on to them should they ever be used for summoning.
What's that? Oh, what's it called? Did you do a spell on those eggs? And this is niche, but it used to make money. What is it called? Incremation?
Something. What?
It's a cobra scroll. A cobra.
What are you
scroll.
Talking about?
This is some arcane bit of summoning that is absolutely nonsense to me.
Yes, you take a cobra summoning pouch. Get the, you know, do the special scroll, and you do it on.
Is this real? Egg.
Yes,
I just looked it up. Ophidian incubation scroll.
See, and you used to be able to make some decent money.
Oh. Yeah. So convert.
Let me guess. This came from the triplets, Tannis.
I plead the fifth. No, this one didn't come from them. This one was from one of my other skilling legends.
God, the tiny little things stashed away in this game.
And then what do you do with the egg? Like a guthatrice egg.
Like a cockatrice egg or
oh, and then you turn it into a pouch.
Spirit Saratrice and whatnot. Oh, wow. Just these incredible spirit versions.
The vulture one is. The vulture trice egg is 51k GP.
Yeah. Pengatrice egg. Oh, wow.
And what's the point of these familiars? Does anyone use them?
I
have a petrifying.
I don't know that part. That's me. I wasn't in that part of the food chain, but
yeah, this is its own tiny little niche that I can't imagine being relevant at all these days. But it's one of those things that I'm kind of glad it exists because RuneScape is like that. There's always these weird little things.
Interesting. So the spirit
vulture might come in handy.
The spirit volatrice. What is its passive? Oh, it's a forger for cockatrice eggs. Interesting. Petrifying gaze drains the opponent's ranged level.
Yeah, that was on the other
two. Okay.
Just wait till these become the meta.
Yeah, I forgot about these. All right, fair enough. Moving on from that, recently converted interface. Pets now have a despawn animation, which is good. Just makes them feel as though they're all part of one thing.
A little bit realer.
Yeah. Collection logs. All collection logs interfaces will stay open while in combat or entering combat. And when acting with objects. They will also update in real time. For example, the clue collection log will remain on screen and update as you open clue caskets.
Yeah, that's a rather nice one. Just open up that window.
Yeah.
And keep on going.
Same with the archaeology interface as well. We'll do that for the material storage. So that's good. And players can now also use the worker icon on the base camp management interface to manually input numbers and assign workers rather than clicking on them.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I'm done with base camp now, but that was a lot of spam clicking back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I hadn't finished on base camp was the drop from Slayer, because I haven't done any Dinosaur Slayer.
I haven't got that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Quality of life-wise, and we're into the general patch notes now, the music playlist has been expanded from 30 to 100 slots, more than tripling the number of favorite songs that you can have on.
Yes. There's a lot of people I'm seeing excited about this because, it's really nice to just have the music on as you go, have your own selection. And I saw multiple people in Discord, Twitter, whatever, just saying, oh, man, I can expand my playlist now. Give me suggestions. So it's been a sort of communal experience of everyone sharing their favorite music and building up these playlists together.
Yeah, and, you know, many people laugh at the RS music, but it's actually pretty good. So.
Oh, yeah. Biggest game soundtrack of pretty much ever, from what I'm aware.
Yeah,
it has a Guinness record.
I have it on unless I am watching something else, pretty much.
Yeah, same. So.
Music playlist now lists the number of tracks that have been added to it, and the order of Slayer's achievement has been updated to include Jacqueline and Mandrith.
Mm. That's something that probably should have come with the original update there, but
yeah.
Well, better late than never.
The order of Slayer achievement is to do a Slayer task from every Slayer master. That's what that is, if anyone's wondering. And finally, fixed an issue with the effigy incubator that was causing players to lose related effigies.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that issue would have been.
No. No, I don't know. Probably some kind of fringe case. But we shall leave it right there. Next up, following from that, we had our leads Q&A this week. And this is this was a good one. I think we... I can be happy with the direction that that we went on this, because I just think it's good to hear from the leaders on this. And after the case of where we came from the login lockout, I think everybody just needs that little bit of reassurance on this. And we had Mod Warden and Liam with Mod Hooli hosting. I'm going to, you know, be a bad podcast host, but I don't even know what Mod Liam is in charge of.
Yep, not someone I'm familiar with at all.
On the other, I mean, but I thought, once again, Mod Hooli seems to be starting to...
Oh, he's in charge of the ninjas.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense, because he was talking about the ninjas coming in and helping.
Yeah.
I'm doing some stuff behind this. Okay, yeah. I guess that makes sense. But didn't you notice, like, Mod Hooli, I'm telling you, in the, when things get challenging, boy, you see what people are capable of, huh?
Yep.
I thought this was another well-hosted stream.
Yeah, Hooli's good with these, from what I've noticed. Definitely got a handle on it.
Yeah, that's good. So getting into the content, as of this Wednesday, roughly 70% of people were back in game. They aim to have the remaining batches back in game by the end of the week. And I guess I'll just talk a bit about that now, because we were going to end the RuneScape segment with this. As of today, at 1600 game time, Thursday the 8th, they say 88% of accounts were returned. And the next batch will occur on Friday, and they say this expects to restore almost all accounts, bringing it up to greater than 99.9%. And
yeah, I'm glad
I've
this saga is finally ending.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they did say that there will be a retrospective on this to ensure that, you know, players are fully aware of everything that happened and provide some information about that, about what's being done to make sure it doesn't happen again. And just a reminder to everybody out there who is listening to this, if you were a locked out player and you didn't get an email, they say just try and log in anyways, because sometimes there might be a problem on their end, either with the email being sent or it being received properly by your email provider. So just try and log in. Now, you know, we've had a lot of discussion on our Nibbles about this from player compensation, in terms of that, you know, hey, we can't ever have the time that was lost from this ever be returned from us. So, you know, there better be some kind of good compensation around this. And what was said on the live stream is that the compensation strategy needs to be focused around a baseline, taking into account all the different kinds of players that are there, from free-to-play to subscriber to Iron Man. And they are fully aware that there are opportunities out there to do more for Iron Man, just because of the limitations that are put on the Iron Man accounts and how most of, you know, the things when it comes to the lamps and the keys and whatnot are not an Iron Man feature that they can use in terms of the compensation pack we talked about last week. So there's going to be a lookout as to what could be done with that. And if you were a locked out account and an Iron Man mod warden would like to hear more about what Iron Man players would value most from this, in particular the gap of time that people had missed. And he said the best option would be is that if he had a time machine, he could just go back and, you know, rewind time to make sure that that didn't happen. But unfortunately, that's not possible. So
we can only go back and watch it, right? If we've learned nothing at all.
If we learned anything from flashback, right?
Go ahead at the memories, get killed by a goblin archer. It's all fine, right?
Does anybody feel like when we talk about waves, wave feels like a big word, doesn't it?
Also,
so it's a wave. It's a wave of people.
Right. And yes, that implies there's going to be more than one. Where are you going with this?
I feel like this is affecting more people than I really gave it credit for.
Yeah. I've been wondering about what the 1% actually refers to. Yeah. Is it 1% of active players, or is it 1% of the entirety of everyone who signed up to RuneScape?
Yeah, I was beginning to have the same kind of question, because like I've said from day one, I think they've handled everything as well as they possibly can. But, you know, when you start talking about waves and stuff, when we know we've had several waves, and I would say, I mean, it's a few hundred with the way that the words that they've used when they have talked about it, you would think it's at least a few hundred at a time.
Yeah.
And that's more probably than what I probably was thinking originally. Yeah, but it's great that, I mean, by the end of the week, that ought to be, you know, we ought to get almost everyone back.
Yeah. And I've heard from a few of the people that I have, been talking to on this, that they are indeed back, so that's good.
See, so yeah, that's really good. And you know, for the Iron Man, that's such a hard thing, because I mean, you're very limited. One, you're limited to like membership, but maybe I don't know, a cosmetic item, like an actual physical item that, you know, was untradeable. Well, obviously it's untradeable. It's Iron Man. Something that commemorated, you know, because there's nothing you can do game-wise, right, to make their game easier, because that's against...
And most of them wouldn't want that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's against, like, the essence of Iron Man. So what do you do in that case? It's almost like you just have to give them something cool to acknowledge, like, yeah, man, that sucked. Are bad.
Well, they do have. They do have a cosmetic. They have the returned cape. They also have the ring of returning or whatever it's called.
Why don't you just give Iron Man a party hat? They can't trade with other players.
But what if they DI in?
And they can always put it in their chest and have their main pick it up.
Good point.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can drop trade. I wouldn't do that.
But yeah, I've seen actually the consensus from quite a few Iron Men I've been seeing just hopping about the Reddit and whatnot is that they would actually like something to make up their time. Like, oof. It is really
like what?
Really
do you pay them a wage?
I don't know, but something like double XP would be good for them. Like an
but
item
would they
that
want
gives them.
That? I don't know that they would.
Some people do. Some do. Like not on account of it being a special thing that everyone gets, but on account of essentially doing the same thing and being able to do this for a month in real time and essentially making up for 2 months in the process of this. I'm kind of devil's advocate here because
sure.
I personally am not a competitive player at all.
Yeah.
And if I'd been locked out for a month, I'd just keep on playing and keep on doing the things I'd intended to do. But yeah, there are a lot of people who feel like this is a real loss for them and they would like for it to be made up for somehow.
So they do have access to the cosmetic items that the other return.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, and perhaps this is going to be the hardest thing going forward. And I think what you have to do in this case is you have to find a good consensus between Iron Man characters who were locked out, and you know maybe even just send them out a brief survey or something, right?
Hmm. Yeah, get some more concrete ways of gathering this information than just Reddit upvotes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Reddit is, of course, going to distort things as it always does. So,
well,
yeah.
Do they have access to the, you know, daily diversions and the D&Ds?
Yes.
Like, can they do those? So you could probably pack 2 months worth of those opportunities in a month.
Bunch of reset tokens.
Mm-hmm, something like that, maybe. That might be an idea.
Anyways, the Ninja Team is helping out with a lot of the things that are going on in April regarding the themed weeks about this. And this was a dress that, you know, everything that comes out in April in terms of the themed weeks are not actually just simple toggles that get turned on. They're being iterated on and brought forward for it and just being added to along the way with that. So it's not something that was just, you know, thrown in. They're actually putting some work into this as well. And that's what the Ninja Team is currently being occupied with. So I think Ninja Strikes will probably be smaller until we're into May at this point, I think.
That's fair, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really have been having to pull a lot of people in for this, and that's entirely fair.
Yeah.
I do wish there was a bit more of that spirit from the early times of the login lockout, where things were a lot more forgiving. Now people seem to have lost patience rather a lot.
Yep. And,
oof.
And I mean, it's good they're getting it fixed, because I know we felt the sentiment change about 10 days ago on that, so... that's there with that. It was the Friday before the last update that those kind of things started to happen with that. But
yeah. Well, did you notice, Shane, and I hope I'm not preempting you here, but they kind of mentioned...
Oh, no, preempt people, away.
Well, they mentioned what a lot of people suspect may have been the beginning of this ordeal, and that it is... going to be corrected next week as well.
The Elite Dungeon bug? Yeah, I don't think, looking back on it, I don't think the Elite Dungeon bug or any rollbacks were associated with this at this point. Because the sense that I got, and I think I heard this somewhere, is that they hadn't even started doing rollbacks for the Elite Dungeon stuff yet. So, I don't think...
Okay, so I've... I've heard murkier timelines with that. So.
Yeah, okay. And of course, that's what you do for dramatic effect at this point, right? And all will be revealed in good time, of course, with their post-mortem post. Post-mortem post. Get it? Wishes. Let's talk about wishes, because this is something you and I postulated on last week. They say this will be used as a way to clean up around the edges for things that players might have missed in the restoration process, but every player will get a wish, but people who were affected will get more.
What I was thinking when I read this was, do you remember the Desert Pantheon aura?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just an item where you get to select from a bunch of bonuses, but I guess limited charges here.
Yeah, and what they said was that they want this to be a hard decision of things that you might choose. So, based on what was said, I think things like XP are going to be on the table, bonus XP. They did also mention invention components as well. So I think if you can look at what happened with the lockout in terms of what people were missing throughout that time, D&D reset tokens maybe, I think it's going to be a grab bag where you're going to be able to pick some of those things and just grab them straight off the bat.
So normal players get to make the hard choices, whereas the players who've been locked out get more of a compensation. They get to pick whatever they might be involved with.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm anti-wish. I can't help it. I feel like this is just not a good idea.
You wish for nothing.
Well, you know what my uncle used to say, Shane? My uncle Dwayne used to say, "You can you wish in one hand, you shit in the other. You see which one fills up first." And I mean, when you think about it, a wish, it's too open for interpretation. It's too open for you could have any kind of expectation. The hype train could just
not the best way to market.
I just don't like this whole wishing thing. And what is this crap that, like, oh, you got to get the kid a present whose birthday it isn't because they're going to whine and cry and throw a fit because the other kid whose birthday it is is getting presents. You know what I mean? Like, just something about it rubs me the wrong way.
Fair enough.
And, you know, they have been very cryptic about what this is going to be. And, you know, they said we'll get more information as we get closer. So let's just, you know, keep this in our mind and, you know, be cautious going forward and keep our eyes open about this and, you know, not make – and I'm saying this to everybody, not you, Tannis, but everybody, just let's not jump to any conclusions on this yet.
Talk it out when there's concrete detail, eh?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as it was a Leeds Q&A, there's also a bit of a recap on what 2021 will entail and the big, big ideas for 2021, of course, of the God Wars dungeon, Elder God Wars, mobile, its release, their ninja strategy, game client modernization, and the Avatar Refresh project. And this is where things got kind of juicy in terms of RS Mobile. The current focus is preparing for the launch date.
Hey! Winter 2017 is here, everybody.
I wish we could go back to winter 2017, honestly. So am I reading too much into this that they already have a launch date in mind?
Well,
or just
the
general launch date?
Yeah, they might be going for just a this year.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's more than this year. At least maybe they got it narrowed down to a quarter. That'd be good.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
And I hope it's still nailed down to a quarter, honestly, and that, you know, we're not dealing with a launch date that's going to be in the first half of the year, because honestly, I don't feel as though it's ready yet.
I get you there.
Yeah. First-time user experience side, UI side, for the stringent people that Apple users are, if you shipped what you had today, you'd wind up with a 2 to 3 star app. It's gone up from a 1 to 2 star app, but you'd still wind up with a 2 to 3 star app in my view.
Oh, geez.
And if you're just looking at new players rather than just send in everybody who knows the game. By all means, if you sent in everybody who knew the game and knew what they were doing, i.e. the 10,000 people who have been doing beta testing, you would be up to that, you know, 4 to 5 range. But if you just look at new players who would come in, I still think you're in the 2 to 3 star rating category on this.
Does new tutorial have any effect on that?
I think that's going to help. That's definitely going to help. I also think some of the UI changes and whatnot that were teased next are also going to help with this. And, you know, some of these things are the first-time user experience, as well as the login screen change that was put out in February was part of these mobile improvements. It wasn't meant out to go to the desktop client. And there's going to be a stream of these small kinds of updates that will improve the game for the mobile client.
Well, and I think what Mod Warden was talking about later on when in reference to, you know, graphical reworks and whatnot.
Yes, I want to have
had a direct correlation with.
Yeah, I want to have a word on that too, because that's going to be a fun discussion. But he also did say that making the game client more readable was very huge, as they did. They also have some nice new tech in the client that they haven't revealed yet, and with this, it's going to be really important.
Right.
Could this be the?
I don't know what it could be.
Could this be the font changes that we've been hoping for? Because we got the UI scaling, we just don't have the font changes, right?
Well, and I kept thinking, I'm like, I bet it's accessibility related, or it might be somehow, or it might be a good effect. Like whatever it is, might have a good effect. You know, and I'm like, what could it be? And I can't think of what it could be, but I'm anxious to find out.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I think the biggest thing outside of moving the Mac client to something more reminiscent tech-wise of what they're doing on mobile, because long story short, the Mac version of OpenGL is pegged back to one that came out in 2013, so we can't get all the new and hot-fangled features of the most recent versions of OpenGL until something changes, and it's not changing on Apple's side. So the RuneScape client, implementation-wise on the Mac, to get better, has to become more like the iOS client. That would be number one for me. But number two, and I mean that technically, number two would be the font rendering changes.
See how these are real wishes that we would like to have for the good of all of the players.
I wish for a usable client.
Well, it's gotten better than what it was. But, you know, the reason I don't play with interface scaling on and I still use a smaller window is because the font scaling is just too blurry for me. Like, the UI scaling is great, but the font scaling is downright atrocious.
Yeah. Funny story.
Okay.
When that gets blurry, you don't know which end it's on. Whether it's on, like if I'm wearing my glasses or whatnot, I'm like, oh, I need to adjust something, or oh, my autofocus is not getting it right. You know, let's reset this. But actually, it has nothing to do with that. It's just I went too high on my scaling.
Yeah.
RuneScape.
Let's talk about upcoming content. The next chapter of the Elder God Wars storyline is coming later this month, so April 26th on that. And we're working backwards from that because Rex Matriarchs will be released on the 19th. And the Elite Dungeon Exploit will be patched on April 12th, this coming Monday, and punishment for the abusers is still in the works.
Oh, the way the Rex Matriarchs update worked out in the end, because that was meant to be less than a week of people grinding out them rings, and it's turned out to be over a month, but also over a month for not everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's quite changed how the economical impact worked out there, hey?
Yeah. And, you know,
I love this go to your room and think about what you've done, and we're still going to punish you later. kind of parenting going on. Well, wasn't that the worst when you're like, oh, maybe it's cool now? No, they just haven't come up with it yet.
I think the simple answer is that unless you did it accidentally, which is going to be very easy to tell from the logs, you're permanently banned, I say.
From what I hear, very difficult to do this accidentally.
Yeah, it is. I saw it done, and it is very difficult to do accidentally. So, let's see. Rex Matriarchs, we know what that's going to be about. Next chapter in the Elder God War storyline. Do you think that's going to be another quest?
It's going to be everything. Look, like, we kept talking about how Anachronia was kind of, well, archaeology and archaeology was last year, but the year before, Anachronia kind of began the whole, like, themed, like, the big themed kind of years. With archaeology last year, kind of really showing how that could be fully formed. And I think that's what we're looking at, because they were talking about skilling, they were talking about bossing, and they were talking about quest, tying it all into the Elder God Wars content that's supposed to be coming soon.
Yeah, so. And you remember last time we left this off, Zaros was heading towards the archaeology campus to raid it.
Yes.
At the end of Azanaldra's quest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's something going on here. I can't help but imagine what the big old Guthix tree just south of that might be involved with.
That would be interesting. That would be
And on another note, Rex Matriarchs is coming out a week before this, and with that, on the stream that came along with that, was the release of a big new area full of closed doors of future content. And I can't help but wonder if that's going to get an expansion too, yeah.
Interesting.
I don't think it would be one after the other, but you raise a good point.
Well, however it works out, what I really can appreciate now is story is being intertwined with everything we're getting, and it's proper world building.
Yes. As a story player, quest player and story player in general, I just really appreciate that so much. It's just a really holistic approach to the world building.
I agree. Next topic was client crashes. The platform team is running through all the bugs that people have sent in that were causing the crashes. That was the focus prior towards the login lockout issues, and over the next couple months they'll be rolling out a series of fixes that will improve client stability.
Well, that's always a good thing. And was this where he was asked about the Australian servers?
Yes.
I know. I almost feel like we need to throw somebody a bone somewhere, right? throw him a bone down under.
Well, it's not even Australian servers, I think, that are the big issue, because, you know, that's close enough to the New Zealand servers. From what I understand, the bigger issue is the Latin America ones, specifically Brazil, because the closest they can get to that is their data center servers in Florida.
Yeah, I would say that probably would be a higher priority, just because, Brazil's, that's a high density population country, right?
Like, yeah.
Well, but then again, I guess it all depends on what are the numbers from Brazil.
Exactly.
We've seen quite a few.
Okay.
I know
Aussies are out in force.
And remember, the game exists in Brazilian Portuguese as well. It's one of its translations.
For what it's worth, on the Australian servers, I've seen that the actual issue there is not so much the ping or whatever. It's actually the fact that if they get to, say, over 400 users on a certain world, then the game begins to become pretty much unplayable. You put in some input and 10 seconds later it starts registering.
Okay, so that sounds more like a hardware quality issue then.
Well, it seems to be quite common among the various Australian players who've reported it. And the problem is that they have only 4 servers, like 3 Australia and 1 New Zealand, I think, from the looks of it.
Yeah.
And just the addition of another server or two would spread that out a whole much more evenly rather than the massive load that they are under.
Right. And if that's causing problems, one has to ask, why are we still running these servers with a 2,000 player limit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because...
Because that's what we started with back in the day with this little game running on in the browser.
Now
but now you're dealing with
something
that's a lot bigger. Is 2,000 still the right number? Like,
have you ever tried playing on World 84?
Right. You have to ask that question. Is a full server actually going to work? So there you have it. Now, the next part of this live stream was the interesting part. And, you know, people always love asking about graphical reworks. And the question associated, or the answer associated with this is that, you know, no, there's no current graphical reworks in progress. If we did do a graphical rework, though, it would be tied to a piece of content where that could be shown off. And Mod Warden, in particular, highlighted the starting areas of Lumbridge and Burthorpe as areas that would be good. He also wants to talk with Mod Iroh and talk with him about what some of the sore spots would be and maybe have him on a live stream to discuss the world in that manner. But he's also eager to hear what the players have to say in terms of graphical rework.
I feel they're taking the wrong tack here. Because Lumbridge looks fine. Burthorpe looks great. So they've been shuffling that about, like, as well as the actual graphics of it being relatively recent still. I think there is a push to have everything up to the current standard, the current
like
house
the Dave
style,
and Dale kind of standard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But all the same, for the sake of... I feel you've got to reach a point where you're okay with some things being fine for the sake of some things not looking terrible.
Right.
Rather than having some things look amazing and having some things look terrible. For example, have you seen Varrock? When did that last get updated?
That was after RuneScape HD, 2009.
Yeah. So, over a decade.
And same thing with Ardoin. Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Varrock in particular.
Karamja hasn't been updated since RuneScape 2.
Yeah. But Varrock in particular, I'd like to point out, is one of the main areas in the game, especially on the free worlds. And it is one of the main areas that the new players will be going to. And yeah, I think that's a sore spot in need of attention. And there's so much on there that it'd be quite easy to link up some lore to put in with it. Hell, it's close to the Arc Guild.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd also just like to say to everybody out there who is a veteran, is that if you're asking for an area to get graphically updated, if you want Varrock graphically updated, for example, be prepared for the entire city to be knocked down and rebuilt with different buildings, and only really the buildings that are important to quests and whatnot would remain in place. So that would mean that your 2 banks would remain in place, the castle would remain in place, the pub would remain in place, and the museum would remain in place. And everything else would be fair game for moving around or
most likely
tweaking.
Your panties would not stay in place because those would be in a bunch. And true that. Now, obviously, I think the whole thing about Mod Warden talking about Burthorpe and Lumbridge is those are the 2, you know, entry points, right, after you get out of your tutorials and whatnot. And I have mixed feelings about Lumbridge in particular because I like the fact that Lumbridge kind of feels like it did when I started. I mean, yes, obviously it's been through... a God War and, just some other things. It's not exactly as it once was, but still pretty close. There's just something about that I don't mind much. I feel like Lumbridge was supposed to be the backwater kind of, you know, kingdom.
The homey, smallish town.
Yeah, you know, the hamlet and the in the shadow of Varrock and stuff. So, you know, I'm conflicted when it comes to
Lumbridge. If you look at the graphical quality of those areas, Lumbridge and Burthorpe, and you compare it to everything else in game, those two are already pretty good, I think. I think what you instead need to do is you need to look, like you said, questscaping at maybe Varrock. Or if you're looking at doing something a little bit more expansive, maybe Ardoyan, but I don't know what kind of content you would tie with that. Personally, though, I think the thing that needs the biggest attention is Kiramja, because honestly, outside of a couple of quests and the odd clue scroll, there's really no reason to go there.
Yeah, Kiramja is just so neglected.
And there's an opportunity right now. With the whole Elder God War stuff going on, right?
You've got the Tsar there. You've got Ful right there.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, there is an opportunity. Now, that being said, Elder God Wars is happening this year, and I think a rework for Kiramja would not. I mean, that's probably
and from some perspectives
project,
on that,
right? Like, at least
I feel it would, you'd have a better result if you did Kiramja and you use that as a way to kind of kick into that return to traditional storytelling that we've known. Because they did say they kind of ramped things down a bit after the Elder God War.
Oh, you mean like smaller stories?
Yeah.
Ramp things down
a bit.
You know, I would like to see, now that we've had all these big, huge storylines, I wouldn't mind seeing some more kind of going back to regional storylines.
Right,
you could start doing this graphical reworks, because you're going to be working on content in this area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
who even knows what's going on lore-wise with the actual people of Kiramja? Let's go talk to them, have a bit of a quest for them.
Yeah,
find out.
So that's why I think that's a perfect option to go with. You know, it might not be the one that gets the most bang for the buck. That's probably Varrock based on this. Unless the engagement surveys say something else about Lumbridge and Burthorpe, then maybe that's the way to go on it.
Yeah.
So there's multiple ways to go. It just depends on where you want to get your data.
Well, and I think you're right about the need for Varrock, but I think people that would be like against it. I think they'd be against it once it happened, because it would be too much change. But Kiramja, that's down there. You kind of sneak that in, right? Like, if you make it good, you make people want to go there. If you don't, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
Yeah.
I think outside the most rabid clue scrollers, there's no one who really has that much familiarity with it from going there on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So you could get away with doing a lot more, I think. Mm-hmm.
It could become the central place for the new woodcutting rework.
Well, they've got the Overgrown Idol there.
There's precedent for that, right?
Mahoganys.
Lord knows I spent my time down there with the special logs.
So,
exclusive area. That's like the prototype for the Menophos VIP.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Oh, the old trading sticks. Mm. Fun.
Perfect. Perfect. So there's some ideas on that, and I think there's three very good choices and directions about which way you could go. Next question was, will Yak Tracks ever get a re-release? And they said it's not something they're thinking about. They could run possibly a medley kind of Yak Track where you can pick up some of the cosmetic rewards through that if you missed out. But I don't know what that would do for players who already have them all.
And without an overarching theme, I don't think that would feel as good, you know, because it's nice to have the themes to them. It's nice to be able to know what to expect rather than just, oh yeah, this is just catch up. That feels not as special in a way.
And I think the best solution to this is what they're already doing. Just pop them all in the oddment store.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. This didn't appeal to me really at all, because I thought that's what the oddment store
is.
I mean, it's already happening. So I just didn't Yeah, I just didn't really get the need for it.
Yeah. They were also asked about why not a mini quest for Easter. And they said, yeah, you know, we wanted to actually create a spring event Easter hub that's going to be expandable each and every year, and the mini quest just doesn't fit with that. So
this doesn't track me, because that was what they said for Halloween, and they got a mini quest out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think that the era of holiday mini quests are gone, in terms of the same way that, you know, you might couldn't do a mini quest in the future for Easter. I just think it was gone this year because of that, right?
Yeah.
They could choose to do a mini quest that could unlock a new area of the spring event hub next year. You never know, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
hey, as long as they don't clutter up my screen, I'm cool if right. whatever happens.
Right.
I would like to say, though, that for all the Easter wasn't actually a mini quest or anything, April Fool's was quite great, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
that was definitely in the sort of old style. You've got I actually gathered there with a bunch of friends on the stroke of midnight because they'd had a bit of a build up
right.
over the preceding day, and well, at midnight game time anyway, little cutscene plays and we get to see Kirill Psutaroth or yeah. whatever.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that. I mean, it was a good little event. But I don't know. I just don't like the idea of a little creepy balloon following me.
Oh, fair enough. Not a balloon.
Clans. Yeah, this is something that was talked about. And, you know, he says, yeah, there's lots of work that could be done addressing this. And it's something that they'd like to do, especially as the anniversary for Citadels is coming up. But it's something that is on the radar. So we'll keep that in mind.
You know, Old School is also revamping their clans around now. So they're hoping to do it basically in the RS3 style of having a friends chat.
That's good.
A clan chat, a guest clan chat, yeah.
Let's see, what else was there? Server performance issues, once again. He says that there's more on the way this year that's going to deal with server performance, including improving game responsiveness without necessarily changing that tick rate idea. Sounds good. We'll wait to see that when it happens. Could Yak Track be extended further? And, you know, this is a question they have. If it's going to need to be extended further at all, or if that's the right thing to do, period, or if it should just maybe be done for people who are locked out. And then after that, they talked about the wishes, and we already talked about wishes earlier, so I think we can call it a T on the live stream there, unless you guys have anything else from this one that you want to mention. So, all right. We do have a couple of listener questions this week, but before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon subscribers for this episode, because without you guys, this would not be possible. So this week, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, CGB900, Christian S., Cook Me Plunks, Danny C., Diana, Duramax, Gabrielle, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Parnassius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Soupfinder, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us, and of course, if you want to learn what all this is about, just check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. There you can subscribe for as little as a dollar a month, and you can gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, which I can say now includes our April Fool's Day edition, where we talked about the fictitious launch of the sailing skill.
That was fun, huh?
That was pretty fun, and I hope that we didn't give anybody lust for sailing after that, because it was pretty interesting.
I kind of want it. At least I wouldn't be disappointed.
So, hopefully you guys are enjoying that, for those of you guys who are hearing that. But you get, and I mentioned the monthly bit, and you get access to that for as little as a dollar a month. There's more, you know, if you want a Discord rank or stereo podcast, you can subscribe for $3 a month. Or if you want a shout out each and every week and access to the clips we used to make the clip show. You can get that for $5 a month. But nonetheless, thank you to everybody for making what we do here possible. Currently, we are working towards a Patreon thank you note that will be sent out to all of our Patreon supporters at $200 a month. And, you know, should we ever reach this really far away milestone that some people hope takes a while to get there, others are interested to see what it'll be like. If we ever reach $500 a month, we will undertake the Hot Ones Challenge, Tanis, myself, and others. I might be regretting it after that, but I know you will definitely be regretting it, won't you?
Absolutely. We're the only thing hotter than the wings are the questions.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have people come up with questions for that, aren't we?
Uh-huh. Yeah, like real good ones.
Ooh. That's fun.
First B&B special edition in tears from Spice.
Yep. And that will be a video edition, I believe.
Oh, boy.
It would have to be. It would have to be, right?
Have fun.
Yeah. I know Sirion's already out. I know Earth is out. Questscaping?
I mean, I do think I can take my Spice. I might try it.
All right. I'll put you on the maybe list. But nonetheless, if you want to learn more about any of this, just check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
All right. So the first question is for you, Tanis. It is from Whitey Gaming. How are you gaining so much fishing XP in Skill of the Month? He says he went hard at fishing at the Ark, and I'm not even close to your rates.
You know, the sad thing is, though, I'm in third, right? I mean...
Oh, you are?
Dude, the first day, I woke up to see I was in third. I was like, damn, I thought I was doing all right. Now, second day, I moved up to second place. I'm like, okay, this is what we need to do. Because if you want to win a competition, what you do is you get a lead, and then you just step on him, you know, like you got to increase that lead until it's just too daunting to even want to compete. And then when I woke up today, I noticed someone was doing that to me, because now I'm back into third. I was like, ah, man. But fishing is a gathering skill. So to trick to it is you got to find more hours in a day, right? And that's really all there is to it. Make sure you optimize the time that you have with, you know, your shark suit, your urns and whatnot. But otherwise, you know, you got to find more hours in a day. That's really.
Are you doing whack-a-mole at deep sea fishing?
Well, now, see, there's something, there's the other thing. I think it comes down to consistency of what you're able to pull. For me, whack-a-mole isn't consistent. I might be able to pull a really good rate, maybe for... Even if I could pull a steady rate for an hour, it would be an hour's worth, right?
Right.
So for me, it's a lot better to find a place that is steady and maybe not as high XP as whack-a-mole, but consistent.
Which... Which, reading between the lines, tells me waterfall.
I mean, I can't tell everybody how. I mean, I'm already in third. What are you trying to put me back to 10th or something?
Well, I'm just assuming that there are people in the competition who won't do the waterfall for moral reasons.
A magician never reveals his tricks.
Moral reasons?
Yeah, I don't.
Have you seen how much XP was gained by the guy in first, Bear Op?
Wow. Yeah. 11 million so far.
Yeah, dude.
Oof.
Yeah, dude. Like, yeah, dude.
That's gotta be whack-a-mole, right?
I mean, maybe a portion of it. But if you look, see, that's the thing, man. If you look, he's polling like about an average about 2 mil.
2.7.
Actually, oh, is it 2.7? Okay, yeah. So 2.7.
Frogger Man. Second right now with 8.3 is pulling an average of 2 mil. You're pulling an average of 1.8.
Right. And so, like, I know from past experience in fishing competitions that I know I can better what I'm doing. You know, I like to say, like, I remember Brew winning a fishing competition, and he got, like, it was something insane, like 15 mil, fishing XP. I'm like, that's incredible. And then, like, the following fishing competition, he was done and I was competing and I pulled 18, and I thought it can't be beat. And now I'm looking here and going, damn, he's got 11 already.
Like, and there's 10 days left. Might,
the old record might be beat, you know? And, so all I can say is, I want to quote Toby Keith and say, I'm not as good as I once was.
Yeah.
But I'm good once as I ever was.
And just, you know, to, you know, answer the question, if you're wanting the best fishing XP in game, you're going to want the, there's an aura associated with this. I forget the name of it currently. Call of the Sea or something like that, right?
I mean, do you want me to write down my list, Shane? Like, do you want me to be like, no. Hey, come on up here in the top three? Come
no,
on
No, I mean, it's an aura. Here. It's the shark
no,
suit.
Yes, you definitely want your shark suit. You want to have your Call of the Sea. I'm using a legendary Call of the Sea. Make sure you got some wax, because you're going to want to double that yep. Call of the Sea. If you're a real skiller, you probably have some things in your bank that combat people use all the time, and you got stacks of them because you don't use them. When Call of Sea is on cooldown, there are other skilling auras that could be useful.
Yeah, incense sticks.
Damn it.
They got him.
Torstal incense sticks.
Yeah. Damn
to boost
it.
The base XP. Cadentine incense sticks if you're fishing at a spot that can disappear.
Mm-hmm. Clan Avatar. I don't think that this actually helps, but I keep the granite lobster out because it's just tradition at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a passive boost to fishing level, so that probably helps. Yeah. I don't know that it would help at waterfall, but I know that it definitely would help if you're doing something like sailfish, but if you're going for XP, you're obviously not going to do that. But the places right. You're going to go for your XP are going to be the whack-a-mole fishing at deep sea fishing, the waterfall, and the arc.
Yeah, the arc's good. I mean, but here's the thing. I'm a firm believer in a consistent rate.
A consistent training method.
And
the arc is done within the hour.
Right, and especially for gathering, though. Like, yeah. That's what makes all... You can't munkle math. Actually, you know what? Bear Op, you totally can munkle math this. I think you should go really hard for 10 minutes at a time at barbarian fishing. Actually, it's supposed to be
interesting. Really, I thought that was only effective for lower levels.
Shane, you're killing me, Smalls.
Oh, crystallize at barbarian.
No, I'm back trying to throw. Classics, eh? Yeah, I'm trying to throw off the trail here.
Oh,
the only person I threw off was Shane.
Juju potion.
Yeah, lots of, you know.
Tavia's rod, if you really want to do that.
Wow.
Maximize your time.
Perks like honed.
Yeah, and I've got. I mean, obviously, I've got like a pretty I've got a level 20 rod.
Yeah. There's also the gathering relic power.
Which, that really makes me wish I had picked up relics as I was going through archaeology more.
Yeah.
Intense skilling at this point seems to involve as much in the way of switches and whatnot as high-level combat.
You know, you're probably right on that. You're probably
when it
right.
comes to preparation, yes. for sure. For sure.
Fascinating.
And of course, you know, you got
I wish we had this kind of depth to the woodcutting skill.
Well, I mean, you got your outfit.
Yeah, you got the outfit.
You got your
but I mean training methods, right?
Well, you got crystal.
Yeah, crystal. You got elder.
You got arc.
Arc. And Menophos.
Menophos crystallized. Yeah, so. And ivy is still hanging in there.
Really?
Okay. Wow.
Well, it's consistent.
Right.
Like.
Well, hopefully I didn't blow your lead, Tanis, or your third spot here on
Dude,
this.
Dude, I mean, I've got some catching up to do. I mean, And I know I've done it before. I've gotten, and I know I've done better than 2 mil a day. But boy, I'm starting to run out of hours that I can find.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm already slacking off at work and neglecting the family. I mean, that's how you do it.
All righty. Well, thank you, Whitey, for that question. Hopefully, that provides a little bit more insight on this. I think I covered most of the things there. There's probably a few little other micro optimizations that someone can fill in for you on there. But the next one is from the Lion, who has a small idea for an improvement that could be made to the Oddman store into certain untradeable items. It would involve giving you the ability to convert certain untradeable items into oddments via right-click option. These would then be the items obtained from Treasure Hunter, the Premier Vault, Twitch loot boxes, quest rewards, and so on. And these would be things such as XP lamps, stars, Protean items, training dummies, Silver Hawk Down, Tight Springs. So pretty much any item you can get from Treasure Hunter at this point. And with this, he also proposes that they add a small, medium, and large cash bag to the Oddman store, which would allow you to get something of value for your oddments if there's nothing else that you need. What are your thoughts on these ideas, and are there any downsides to these changes? Thank you for the weekly podcast and the distraction from the outside world, the Lion. P.S. I posted this idea on Reddit, hoping it might pique a JMod's interest.
I think this is the sort of idea that benefits the players more than it benefits Jagex to implement.
Yeah, and
that's due to the nature of monetization, as nasty as that may be in its in itself, because that does rely on you being supplied and some amount of undesirable stuff.
And here's the thing, though. Yeah. When you get any of these items off Treasure Hunter currently, right now, you can just convert them to oddments straight away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you have a huge stack of these, I don't see that that's needed. But I can definitely see that if you get a lamp from a quest, or maybe you make the wrong decision on something you get from Treasure Hunter, you could do that. I think the only thing you would have to do with this going forward is make it so that things that are already in your bank and that you've already gotten prior to this coming in wouldn't be able to be converted. But I would see no problem with having a retroactive convert to oddments after you claim it from Treasure Hunter.
Okay, so you can change your mind later.
Yeah, but just not for anything you already have, because, I mean, I think that would probably cause a glut on the oddments market.
Yeah.
And from the sounds of it, last we heard, they want to do something with those currencies, and you don't want to necessarily have everyone swimming in oddments when those arrive. So,
Yeah, as far as the cash bags go, that's an awful lot of money, isn't it?
Big one's a mil, medium one is about 100k, and the small one's about 10k.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the balancing, could be better, could be worse, but either way, that is raw cash, and that's always something you've got to be careful with very few gold sinks in the game, apart from the death costs. But yeah, and basically,
I mean, if it was like one a day and it was for a high price of oddments, I don't see the issue.
having a limitation.
Yeah.
But so you can always transform them into stars and stuff, can't you? The prismatic stars. Yeah. And there's very few people to whom that's not useful unless you're a 5.4 bill.
Right, and or very you're a purist. Few people are.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's... I'm not sure.
I think the first idea is okay. The second one, of course, would have to obviously be balanced properly. But I think if there was a small amount out on there, I think that'd be fine that you could get. Because I see a world in the future where instead of buying keys, you just buy oddments. And then you buy everything from the oddments store.
That'd be a nice way to harmonize things, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess because cash bags are quite reasonably obtainable from other things, like when you have a limited time currency event, you can buy the token boxes, you can get the cash bags, and that would make sense with consistency there on that front.
Yeah. Tannis?
You know, I'm an MMT guy, so I say make the cash bags 10 times better, because that ain't even real money right now anyway.
So 100K? 100K? Wait,
ain't real money.
100K, a mil, 10 mil. Really?
Yeah, just splash it out.
What?
Go on.
Yeah. I mean, that's not even that much money, man. I mean, 10 mil, you can't even repair your boots for that. Come on.
Just give in to inflation. Go with the flow.
Yeah, I mean, it's only inflation if you don't control the currency, but lucky for us, they control the currency.
Yeah, just add another phase to the Richie Pet.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd like to see a data stream where they talk about how much GP the Richie Pet pulled out of the game.
Well, true, yeah.
Because we haven't had one of those since then.
Would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. But what do you think about his idea, the first part? Tannis.
I think I can get behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really do. I don't really think they were unreasonable.
I see the problem here. Just because this was an MTX post, this thing got downvoted to hell, unfortunately.
That's not right, because it's not...
Right, it's helping the problem.
See, people don't read, and if they do, they... You can't have a preconceived notion until you, like, listen to what someone's saying, right? Like,
well, I will say this: I'm glad that this podcast is a forum where you can have one of these Reddit ideas that gets downvoted, and I will happily talk about your Reddit idea on the podcast. And this goes to anybody out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's been downvoted, we will take that on board. As long as it's well formed, Blue Party hats to everyone.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I mean, you can tell this wasn't something that somebody was like taking bong rips and being like, dude, I got an idea. Like, put some thought into it and stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's not Reddit. Just saying something without any Reddit. Consideration for. Yeah. Hey, equal airtime, eh?
Exactly. Yeah. Whoever said this podcast wasn't democratic? If you want to send your question in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com. Leave them as a DM on Twitter, which is @rsbnb, or just pop them in on our forums at update.rsbnb.com/ask. And at some point in the future, very soon, that questions forum will be being turned into an actual forum on the website where you can just submit questions no matter the day of the week on that, because I realize there's a few days of the week right now where you can't submit questions on that. And with that, we're going to wrap this show up, but we do have to do picks of the week first, and I'm going back to tech news with my pick of the week, because this is an article that just shows so much godforsaken hubris from Facebook on this case. So Facebook does not plan to notify a half billion users affected by a data leak that occurred in 2019. In particular...
Because they figured they've already been preached before, right?
Yeah.
I think the official statement was something like, oh, yeah, we fixed that problem. You can't unleak the leak.
Right. So back in 2019, we knew there was a bug on Facebook where potentially, and the keyword back then was potentially, 530 million users could have had their details compromised with this. And, you know, as with any kind of leak, you know, you can say that that might have happened, but we just got confirmation this week that phone numbers and names and email addresses from this user group were available on a public internet-facing website with this. And this was initially caused by a platform vulnerability back then. And with this, Facebook has said that we have, of course, patched this back in 2019. And as a result of this, no users need to be notified today that there was a further data leak on this. So
see here, carry on.
Yay!
And you know, you can understand Facebook's stance on this, that hey, we patched this in 2019, we don't need to say that this happened. This is just, you know, random ongoings of the internet. But, you know, as with anything that happens on the internet, your data is your data, and that winds up talking about privacy. So you can of course raise the idea that maybe they should have said something this week, maybe they shouldn't have. But I'm just putting this out this week as my pick of the week because I think everybody who uses Facebook just needs to be aware at this point that if you post something on Facebook or if you post something on Instagram or hell, even if you post something on any internet website, there's a chance it could be made public at some point in the future.
And isn't Facebook a publicly traded company by this point?
Right? Yes.
So isn't the whole theory for capitalism to work properly is you need information, the public does.
The modern information economy, yes.
By holding back that, people aren't able to make educated decisions over the value of the stock of Facebook. So they had every motive to not want to say something, right?
Just stay quiet and pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
Where have we heard that before?
No, wait.
Governments.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. Nonetheless, I think as we've talked about many times before on the podcast, I'm seeing less and less reasons for people to be on Facebook with this today. So, anyways, Tanis, I believe you have a pick of the week for us. That's a little bit more uplifting.
Yeah, I mean, my pick of the week goes out to all of the wrestling fans we have out there. And I know there's a few of you, and there's at least a few of you. But if you're like me, you kind of enjoy, you know, the older wrestling from the 80s and 90s kind of that you grew up with. I mean, I'm not going to get into a debate about new versus old. That's the era that I like. And there's a podcast I listen to that is probably, I probably listen to this podcast more than any other, called Jim Cornette's Drive Thru. And Jim Cornette was a manager, you know, back in the day, always carried around the tennis racket, and he managed, you know, the Midnight Express and Yokozuna and, you know, a bunch of other people. But, it's a really cool podcast where you hear a lot of like behind the scenes stories about a lot of the older wrestlers that you grew up, you know, hearing their names and stuff. And as I was telling you before the show, I did not realize just how hardcore Canadians are about their professional wrestling.
I had no idea either.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's awesome. And, yeah, so check it out. It's Jim Cornette's Drive Thru. I mean, and it's just hilarious stories. Like, you just hear all these behind the scene things that, like, you know, ribs that the wrestlers would do to each other, and you know, you hear a lot about Vince McMahon and what kind of makes him tick, and yeah. So I listen to it all the time. He critiques the shows now, you know, like the new, the AEW, I guess it is now, the All Elite Wrestling. And, you know, and of course he talks about WWE and stuff that's going on there. But yeah, so it's not Facebook.
All right. Sounds good. And of course, I assume you can find it on all the podcast listeners out there, as with us.
Yeah, I check. Yep, it's on Apple and everything. I listen to it on YouTube, but it's on the Apple podcast and everywhere else.
All right, Questcaping, you're up next.
So I have sort of a category of recommendations at the moment. So if you're not aware, RuneScape 3 is going through something of a bit of a streaming renaissance almost lately. There has been a lot more interest in people watching and streaming RuneScape as of late. Not old school, but my goodness, the original game. And yeah, so I have three streamers in particular to recommend, and these are all people with a heavy quest focus, because you know me, I am quest caping, I enjoy a good quest.
And the good chunk of the streaming community out there is PVM focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's really rather a nice change to see questing getting so popular as a subject for streaming, and a really viable one too. So I've got a really popular one to recommend. So a lot of people will be aware of Sick Nerd getting into streaming RuneScape 3, originally an old school RuneScape streamer. He's been making an hardcore Iron Man now and getting really into it, and surprisingly getting really into the story and lore as well. Doing the quests, like reading along the dialogue as he goes, and that's honestly been the most popular moments of his entire streaming. Like, I remember watching live for While Gothic Sleeps, and he hit his absolute peak of all time of 5k viewers at the very height of that quest. And that was really quite something to see, to think that legitimately thousands of people can be watching and with a real interest in RuneScape lore. And it's quite surreal to see Twitch chat reacting in its 500 mile an hour way.
Yeah, and you know, that's interesting, because I've long thought that the RuneScape streaming group out there did need a bit of a shake up in terms of the groups associated with it, because every time we heard of RS streaming, it was focused on PVM or something associated with that. But
yeah,
this is entirely different on that. And, you know, I think this is wonderful. You have three of them here.
Hmm.
I wonder what these people are going to do once they've completed all quests.
Yeah, that's the problem, because the thing with PVM is it's repeatable, and quests generally aren't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One but, done.
Yeah. I have someone who's around the middle tier, so fairly popular and fairly well known at the moment. So Jaxis TV, she's actually someone who has now completed all the quests from what I'm aware, and is now going along mopping up some additional lore content. So I tuned in recently to see her doing Effigy Incubator, for instance, and just going along with a general focus on existing as a character in the RuneScape world and interacting with all the other characters involved. So it's almost in character the way she does things.
Oh, like that's nice.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's quite an approach to see, and it's an approach that a lot of people are really enjoying. So yeah, that's around the mid-tier of popularity. And someone who's just starting out, but who I've been watching personally, is Nargles, who is also starting from scratch, doing an Iron Man account, and going through all the quests in timeline order. So the, yeah, Fifth Age, and as the timeline order gives you in-game, progressing up through the quests as she goes, and everything in terms of skilling for the quests, like getting those levels, is generally off-stream. So the streams themselves are just compressed story, and you get to see how every person approaches the quests with their own character. So I know some people like to play quests as themselves. Some people like to characterize their own adventurer as playing in a certain way. So you've got Nargle's character is called Mirabelle, and playing as a Zamorakian, and quite enjoying quite enjoying what that means for her in the early quests. already brought back his eel. Oh, yes. So, yeah, that's been quite fun to watch and quite fun to watch the progress of and will be in future.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And you can find links to all these people in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And perfect time to move on to achievements because we need to wrap this up because I'm starting to feel an allergy attack coming on. I'm not sure if you guys can hear that. But starting off, we have Rex Compidium with 99 fishing on April 7th. Snowlight as well on the 7th with 99 woodcutting. Vodka B got 99 archaeology on the 7th. Harlot Man with 99 invention on the 6th. And Jam Andy 52 with 120 archaeology on April 5th.
And we have Kedgeworth with 99 invention on April the 5th. We have Riora with 99 ranged, also April 5th. The Lion, 200 million fletching XP on April 5th. And Jesse Pinkman, 120 farming, April the 4th.
Well done.
And then we have Takis Fuego with 99 invention on April the 4th. We have Lazy Colonel with 99 agility on April 3rd. Lazy Colonel with 99 mining on April 3rd. And Takis Fuego again with 99 archaeology on April 3rd. And Robbie with 120 cooking on April 2nd.
Nicely done, everybody. Wonderful achievements. You know, we're probably only a few weeks away at this point from another double XP week thinking about it. So, oh boy, that's going to be a – I feel like we're still recovering from the last one. But nonetheless.
You said that in that stream. I'm like, what? We just had one. It's like February was just a minute ago, right? Like,
time is fake.
Yeah, I was like, wow, shouldn't – I thought the next one would be in the summer. But I guess I missed a quarter somewhere.
Right?
I don't know.
Anyways, I know what you've been up to, Tannis on RS. Anything you want to add on to that?
No. That's what I've been up to.
Fishing and more
fishing. I've been fishing.
All right. Mm-hmm. As for me, I have been working on Yak Track. And I mean, hey, we have the time for it, so I've just been going through it. I'm currently on, I think it's 47 or 48. I'm screening archaeology soil. I am using the auto screener at the Orthon dig site, going for potion recipes.
Well, I am slowly but surely going for 120 archaeology. I've been waffling about generally training whatever I felt like, but I thought lately, may as well commit to it. I do love archaeology as a skill. And
so wonderful.
Yes, and it would be my first 120, and what a skill to go for, honestly. One that actually rewards that progress all the way up to the end.
Nice.
Yes. I've been mostly neglecting that Yak Track, but I think I'm on task 5.
Maybe one day I'll let you try the real cape on.
Hey! Oh, yeah.
Alrighty, thank you so much, everybody, for making this episode of RSBNB Update possible. If you guys want to subscribe, just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And, of course, we're on all the podcast listeners out there, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, and, of course, YouTube. That's where you can find the video version of the show, plus the nibbles. Just visit us at YouTube.com/RSBNB. So with that being said, we'll be back next weekend for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.